poverty and riches. Is that the only criteria people have? No, no. We learn from 1 Corinthians chapter 1 that wealth comes in, but so does pride, so does wisdom, so does strength. What does the book of Jeremiah say about that? Let not the mighty man glory in his might, or the wise man, or the wealthy man. But what about human beings? Do we tend to do that? If an Olympic gold medalist came in the door and somebody we didn't know who came in the door, what would we tend to do? We'd all want to go see the other guy we don't know, right? Who cares about that? No, there's something about fame and fortune and power that creates these kinds of things. And so, but that's just the hem of the garment. I mean, have we found a lot of reasons to discriminate against people over the years? Yeah, and all forms of discrimination fall into the same category. What he's dealing with in verse 8, I hadn't really realized this until I started into it again this afternoon. And what we're talking about here is rationalization. In other words, if I am really good to the people in my group, but not so good to the people in your group, what can I tend to rationalize? I'm really good to the people that I know in my group. But what's James hitting at here? What about this? What about these other people? And what I'm hitting at here is most churches have a hierarchy. They have a structure in which people tend to visit with one another. Not so much here, but in some of the larger congregations. Sometimes you never quite get around to some people in the congregation. Have you noticed that? I mean, in a large congregation where you sit in a certain place and you visit with a certain group of people, you may never get over to these other people. And it may not only be because of not time. It may be because you don't want to. Maybe there's some people there you don't want to spend any time with. So what James is after here is an interesting concept, and that is when I think about my circle of concern, my peers, the people that I spend time with, my family, my friends, my brethren, but generally it's not the whole congregation, it's a select few, the people that we've developed a relationship with, and we base our sense of well-being and our sense of self-esteem on those people. And if I'm really friendly to the people that I don't know or that I know and that I like being around, and I don't really have time for these other people, what can I tend to justify myself and say? I'm fulfilling the royal law. I'm loving my neighbor as myself. But remember the question that Jesus got asked about that? Who is my neighbor? And then Jesus talks about the Samaritans and all these other groups of people and how this loving your neighbor as yourself goes a lot further than we think. And so this is a question for all of us to ask ourselves as we think about the group of people that we deal with and the group of people that maybe we ignore. Maybe we don't spend a lot of time with a certain group of people. Maybe we are uncomfortable around a certain individual or a certain group of people in the congregation. And so we don't go spend much time with them. And when we see them coming, maybe we turn away and start talking to someone else. Or maybe it's time to go to the bathroom or maybe something else. And so you need to take a good hard look here, because what James is after is if you neglect or show partiality to anyone, what happens to this verse? It's a two-edged sword, right? So here I am lavishing all of my time and all of my energy and all of my efforts on this select group of people that I, quote, only have time to deal with. But maybe, if I was really honest with myself, it's the people I like being around. And it's the people that I get some sense of self-esteem or some sense of benefit from being around. And these other people, because isn't that the problem that the man had with the wealthy person versus the poor person? What did the poor person not have that the wealthy man had? Money, power, influence. I might get something if I spend time on this situation, but maybe nothing in this other situation. And so James is pointing out a rationalization process that we all really need to take a good hard look at, because it crosses all bounds. I mean, he's even going to talk about, okay, you don't commit adultery, but you've murdered. What does that mean? You're guilty of everything. So a lot of us might be really happy with the fact that I've never committed this sin and I've never committed this sin, but if we're ignoring the sins we are committing, then what does that do to all the rest? So this is something we need to take a good hard look at, because a lot of us are going to stand before the Lord and we're going to have overlooked something. And that's why these verses are in here. They're in here for us to take a good hard look at ourselves and ask ourselves these kind of questions. How do I treat across the board? Go through the directory sometimes and take a look at all the individuals there and ask yourself whether or not you are ignoring, or whether or not there are some people there that you're not as comfortable with or you don't want to spend as much time with. And maybe it's not the royal law you're fulfilling. Maybe it's just you are enjoying the people that you're spending a lot of time with and overlooking others. And I'm not making any accusations here. I'm just saying this is what struck me this afternoon as I was going through this material. And so I thought I'd just kind of point it out to all of us that if we really are fulfilling the royal law according to the scriptures, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, then who's going to get overlooked? If we're really fulfilling the royal law.
None,
exactly. So go through the people and see if there's anybody like that. And if there is anybody like that, what should you do? Maybe you better start spending more time over there and less time with the people you have enjoyed or have more comfort or are more comfortable around. Virgil?
I don't think I've ever been a part of a congregation where there wasn't some semblance of, and I'm not saying overtly, but some semblance of cliques. Call it that, where there's a group that just kind of migrates amongst themselves, and whatever discussions they have or whatever, it just kept within that group.
Right.
And we're taught in the scripture that we should show preference towards our brethren, and that isn't one or two brethren or half a dozen brethren. That's towards brethren, all the brethren. We should show preference to. And try our best to take and treat them alike. Whether we're successful in that, we need to work at it.
Right. Yeah, and one of the commentaries I was reading today, I didn't even put it in my notes. I may come back later and put it in. But that passage in Matthew 25 about where Jesus says, I was hungry and I was sick and I was naked and I was this and I was that. And the brethren come to Jesus. Lord, when did we ever do that to you? And what does he say? To the least of my brethren or of my disciples. So to these least, all right? So take a look at the least. Take a look at the people and see if there's some people that maybe we're overlooking. And then ask yourself that very fundamental question, and that is, am I really fulfilling the royal law of liberty in the way that I deal with people, in the way that I treat people? Now, we spent a little time last week, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it this week, but why is it a royal law? What is it about the law that makes it a royal law? And if you look toward the top of the first page, there's two questions. The first question Jesus was asked is, what is the great? The second question he was asked is, what is the first? Now, whether these are two different accounts or whether this is the same account really doesn't matter. What's interesting is his answer. His answer in Matthew, which is right in the middle of the page, is the first and great commandment, and the second is what? Is like it. So we have the first and the great commandment, and then we have another one that's kissing cousins to it, or a brother or sister to it. And then the next one, and then he says, on these two commandments hang the whole law, hang the law and the prophets. The second question, or the second answer, the first of all the commandments is, and then in verse 31, the second, like it. So there's two commandments that all the other commandments in the law hang on. That's why it's royal. That's why it's regal. That's why these commands are special. They're different from all other commands. Every other command in the scriptures can be made to fit within these. And if we take as a point of fact that is God our neighbor, then loving your neighbor as yourself would be both of them, right? Which is the way Paul puts it. If you look at Paul's statement there in Galatians, which is right underneath the dark and no other commandment greater than these, is that next verse, which is, for all the law is fulfilled in one word, even this, love your neighbor as yourself. So, and then John makes an interesting point. If you say you love God, oh, I love God, I love him so much, but you don't care about your neighbor, What does John say? Yeah, if you talk about loving God, whom you've never seen and you've never had an opportunity to do anything for, and yet you don't do anything for the people you can see, then what are you doing with your life? What's your life doing with your words? Contradicting, exactly, disproving. So if I can't love my neighbor as myself, then I should be very careful. So that's why James calls this the royal law of liberty. If you're really doing that, in other words, if you're really treating the rich man well because of the royal law of liberty, then you've done well. You've done very well, beautifully, finely, excellently is the definition of the term. But if it's just partiality, we've gone from doing well to what? At the bottom of page one there. You commit sin. So we've gone from a very fine, well-directed life into one. So if there is somebody out there that I'm neglecting, if there is somebody out there that I'm not giving the proper amount of time to, what is that telling me? I might be in sin. And I really need to take a good hard look at that. And of course, you know me, that's how I like to take these scriptures. I like to take them and I like to put the most poignant meaning on it, the most powerful meaning, because I don't want to miss something on the judgment day. So we all have people that we care about. But Jesus talked a little bit about that. If you only give to the people who can repay you, then what are you doing more than anyone else? And so if you want to be like your Heavenly Father, what should you do?
Give to those who can't repay.
Yeah, focus on those people. Focus on those people who can never repay you, who can never give you the kind of things that others could give. Virgil, excuse me.
Yeah, you had mentioned about, and I don't know whether an answer ever came back or not, about the royal law. What does it mean, royal? Royal.
Right.
Well, that's a term that most of us learned when we were children. It's royalty. We know what royalty is, the king and the queen and that. They're in the upper echelon.
Right.
And as all the laws that comes to us from our Lord, this is up high. This is something that we've got to do.
Right. That's right. And loving your neighbor as yourself, is that any different than the golden rule? All things that you would have others do unto you, and loving your neighbor as yourself, aren't they basically the same thing? Preferential treatment? Do you want preferential treatment for yourself? I'm always giving preferential treatment to myself. I take good care of me. So what should I do for you? I should give you preferential treatment also. And so that's where I developed years ago that concept of that circle of concern. The people that you really care about. And what is your circle of concern? And why aren't the people who are not in it, not in it? Because you don't have time or because you don't have any interest. You know, every first day of the week, we make announcements about people. And the ones who are in our circle of concern and we ask for prayers, guess what we do every day thereafter? You know, we're praying for them because they're in our circle of concern. But what about the people who aren't? And what if you're never praying for them? What is that telling you about the possible reason why? I'm not saying it's necessarily so, but we have a limited amount of resources and we have to be careful how we allocate them. And so this is a royal law. It's a top-notch law. It's an absolute, you know, like we've been talking about in the Sermon on the Mount. There's just some things in the Scriptures that God gives special emphasis to. When he says this one's royal, is that a pretty good way of saying this is pretty important?
Pay attention.
Yeah, pay attention to this one. Focus on this one. You know, doctrinal purity is wonderful. But Jesus said, on the great day, if I was hungry and you didn't give me anything to eat, or if I was thirsty and you didn't give me anything to drink, guess what I'm going to say? Depart, you cursed, into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. So that's how high up this is. And so we want to be very careful that we're not showing partiality. Now, the term partiality is an idiom. It means favoring face. So I see your face. Oh, it's you. So now, that shouldn't be done. It shouldn't. There shouldn't be to make unjust distinctions between people. by treating one person better than another based on their face. Now, based on their conduct, yeah, does Paul talk about holding such people in honor? People who do certain things that should be held in honor? Well, certainly. Is that partiality? Well, it is, but it's God's partiality. Is God partial?
It's not sinful.
Yeah, exactly. It's partiality based on facts, not partiality based on my own particular criteria. So, and then he uses a word for work right at the top of page 2 there. I didn't put page numbers in because I was trying to fit everything on here. But it's the one, ergazomai, at the very top of page of the page. And it means to labor. So when you're showing partiality, you're laboring to what? To sin. You're committing sin. You are laboring and you are expending effort and energy. And all the good things you do to other people is exercising that same problem. Just like that man. I mean, we can see it with that man. He sees these two people come in. He wants to give that rich man the best seat in the house. And he wants to treat him like he's really something special. But he ruins it all because what does he do to the poor man? Go sit down in my footstool. Sit under my seat. Sit on the floor. What is that telling everyone who's got any sense? Something wrong with this guy. He's committing sin. This is not the fulfillment of the royal law. If it was, they'd both be getting the same treatment. He'd be the one sitting on the floor. And so, and you're convicted. Now, we talk a lot about this word in Timothy because this is a word for shaming someone, for showing that they've sinned and blatantly so. And so it means to convict, to refute, to confute, suggesting the shame of the person. Now, this is going to be a self-shame because nobody but you knows if this is going on or not, but you need to be looking at this. And especially those of us who can see partiality in other people toward us, we need to recognize something, and that is that this is something that we can be doing just as much as we can be feeling. And so we have to be careful too, because this conviction by the law as transgressors is a very serious issue. Now, does the new covenant teach partiality is wrong? The old covenant does. And, of course, we put all these verses in here. You've seen them already. I'm not going to go through them all again because we've already covered them. But I put them here because I wanted everyone that final opportunity to see that God shows no partiality and he doesn't expect any partiality on our part. It's a grievous sin to be partial, to be treating other people differently. And the term transgressor is right above verse 10, right toward the bottom of the page. And it means one who stands beside. Right, so everyone else is in the middle of the group, and where's this guy? He's off to the side. He's not where he's supposed to be. And so this word means one who oversteps the prescribed limit, a transgressor. So trespasser would be another way of looking at it. This is someone who has passed the bounds of loving your neighbor as yourself. And so again, we have to be careful with rationalizations because in verse 10, he broadens it out to every realm. This isn't just true of partiality. This is true of all sin. Many people, you remember that guy in Luke 18, he was so glad that he wasn't like that publican. He wasn't like the rest of men. He wasn't an adulterer. He wasn't unjust. But what was he? He was pride. He was proud. Now, what was the pride doing to him? Jesus said, did he go home justified? No. So the things he wasn't, that wasn't the problem. And this is something we all need to focus on. We're very keenly aware of those areas in our life where we are not violating God's law. And when others violate those laws, we tend to be pretty harsh in our judgment. But we need to be very careful, because that mercy is going to come in that we talked about again last Sunday night and again on a week ago Sunday morning. Blessed are the merciful. So whoever shall keep the whole law, yet stumble in one point. So the Old Covenant is now an illustration. This is an illustration of what happens under the New Testament. Under the Old Law, and we all know this, most of the Ten Commandments, the only one I'm not sure of, was coveting a death penalty offense? You know, we talk about the Ten Commandments and the violation of the Ten Commandments, for the most part, it's what? It's death. But I'm not sure about thou shalt not steal and thou shalt not covet. I think the rest of them, though, any of the first four, if you violate, if you put any other gods before you, if you have a graven image, if you violate the Sabbath day, if you take God's name in vain, what was the penalty? Death. And of course, you shall not commit adultery. That was death. Murder was death. But then, like I say, the coveting, the bearing false witness. I think the bearing false witness, wasn't that like for like? If you were a murderer and I bore false witness, then what was my penalty? Death. But if it was stealing, then I don't think it was the same. But anyway, the point is that at least for those commandments with the death sentence, did it matter which one? If you didn't commit adultery, but you committed murder, were you going to get off for less? No. So, and that's the point that he's making here, is that we have to keep the whole law. And so the okay, that verse at the very bottom there, Deuteronomy 6. Every statute and every commandment was given to keep us alive. Every statute and every commandment was given so that it would be righteousness for us if we're careful to observe. So what if we break one?
Righteousness.
Well, there goes righteousness, right? And there goes being kept alive. And, of course, we learn from the Apostle Paul that when the commandment came and sin came alive, and he doesn't even identify it because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter which one it was. What happened? Sin came alive and I died. So you keep the whole law, but when you stumble in that first point, the entire law has the same purpose. The entire law, whether it's lying or stealing or adultery or murder or any of the other things, it is to keep us righteous, which means to be fair and just, not to take what's not mine, and not to be unfair. Remember, we talked about this a few weeks ago when the little kid first realizes that's mine and you've got it. What does he understand? That's not fair. That's mine. I want it back. And then when he's mistreated, when he is punished unfairly, what does he say?
Not so fair.
That's not fair. So the concept of fairness and equity with what's mine and what's fair is ingrained in all of us, and it comes from God. But God has a much higher standard than we do when it comes to those kind of things, because God's concerned about what's mine, which are things that are even intangible, like my liberty or my dignity or my reputation. So if I bear false witness, is that righteousness? No, see, that's not righteousness. All right, let's go ahead and turn the page. He's guilty. He's guilty of all. So the law, it's interesting. You look at that word just above, he's guilty of all. I'm not going to try to say it. To cause one to stumble or fall. So every commandment in God's command or in God's law is considered to be an obstacle. It's considered to be an obstacle to what? To my being unfair, to my being unjust, to my taking what belongs to you. So every command, if I brush up against it, what's going to happen? I'm going to stumble. I'm going to fall. So these commands in the old law, which were given at that time, that's what they're for. What about the new law? Same thing. Exact same thing. So when I violate something in the new law, what happens? I violate one thing in the new law. Same thing. I'm guilty of all. I'm guilty and I have to get forgiveness. Christ's death on the cross was for each individual sin. And each individual sin requires that death in order for it to be paid for. Unfortunately, the value of his life is so great that every time I go to the bank, can I ever expend it? See, I can't use it up. What Jesus did on the cross with his life, giving his life for my life, his life is so much more valuable than all of our lives. That was the problem with the blood of bulls and goats. It wasn't valuable enough. The blood of bulls and goats can never cleanse us of sin, because the life of that animal is not worth as much as the life of a human being. What about Christ's life versus my life? Well, that's entirely different. His propitiation, his death on the cross, had so much value that God could cover all the sins of all the people who have ever lived. And so, but every time I sin, once again, I become guilty of all. And that was the point that God was trying to make to the Jews. Now, I put these in here. We've covered them several times over the last few weeks, so I'm not going to go through them again. They're just in the commentary for later. But essentially, what God is telling the Jewish people is that you could be a righteous man your whole life, but if you, on the day of your transgression, what's all that righteousness worth? Can't save it up. See, I've been living a righteous life for 90 years, and now I've committed one sin. What does God say? No, those 90 years don't mean anything. It's this one sin that matters. And what did Israel say?
That's not fair.
That's not fair. And God says, no, I'm the one that's fair. You are the ones that are unfair. You can't save this up. There's no pressing. There's no value in being righteous. Like Jesus said, when you've done everything you've been commanded, what should you say? We've just done our duty. We're just unprofitable servants. We've only done our obligation. There's no saving up. All the good things I've done in my life, are they going to overcome any bad thing I've done? Doesn't work that way. So God says, what's fair is you treat people fairly your whole life and don't break my law. But if you break my law and you treat someone fairly, then everything you've done up to that point doesn't matter anymore, because you're guilty. Excuse me, you're guilty of all. And so verse 11 is just an illustration of that. I'm not going to spend any time on it right now, but you know, the point is, if you commit one sin, it doesn't matter what the sin is, you're guilty for everything. So let's start now drawing some conclusions based on verse 12. He says, so speak and so do as those who are to be judged by the law of liberty. So the illustration is now giving way to reality. Here's the truth. Were we under the old law? No, we're not under the old law. We're under the law of liberty. What does that mean? Well, we'll talk about what that means in just a minute. But this is the manner that we need. Now, these are two imperatives. Remember, you've probably heard enough about Greek now to know that an imperative is a commandment. These are present imperatives, which means they're continuous. So, be speaking and be doing as those who are to be judged by the law of liberty. In other words, make the proper application. The old law and the way that people were treated under the old law is an illustration for the new law. It is not an exception. The new law is not something totally different and totally new. It's exactly the same as the old law, except for one thing, and that is the blood of Christ can intervene. But at any given moment, if I sin under the law of Christ, what's the same outcome? I'm guilty of all. And if I don't get that blood of Christ, what does John say in 1 John chapter 1? If I don't confess my sins, he's not faithful or just to forgive me my sins. So even under the new law, that treatment of that poor man was enough to get that man cast into hell. And he needed to repent of it. So, and so would the rest of us. So, in this manner, so speak and so do. So, in this way, and thusly, since you know that any given violation, the way you treated the rich man was great, but the way you treated the poor man undid everything you did for the rich man and turned it into something totally different, sinister, corrupt, evil, partiality. So, we need to look. And sometimes, does motivation change the outcome? I'm here because I'm pleasing you. I don't care about God. My prayers are for you. My sermons are for you. They're not for God. What did Jesus say about that in Matthew 6? Take heed that you don't do your righteousness before men, or else You have no reward with your father. So, and I've seen many a good preacher go down because they started getting more interested in the praise of men than the praise of God. And so when we're looking at this in verse 12, verse 12, it crosses all the boundaries. Certainly it's true for partiality, but it's also true of any other sin that you're not repenting of. And if you're, like a lot of Christians, just relying on all the other good things you're doing and figuring, well, God's all going to average out. I've been a very faithful Christian for the most part. I just haven't been able to deal with this one thing very well. Well, what should you do? You better drop everything and cut off that one thing, because what does Jesus say? If your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. Because if you don't, you're going to be cast into the lake of fire with your hand. But if you cut it off, you'll be entering into life without the hand. So this is serious, really, really serious. And it's something to really cause us to seriously reflect. I need to be speaking and doing with the understanding I'm going to be judged by the law of liberty. And so there is going to be a judgment. What did Paul say about that in 2 Corinthians 5, verse 10? We must all stand before the judgment of priest, excuse me, the judgment seat of Christ to receive the things done in the body, whether they be good or whether they be bad. So we've just spent a lot of time in Romans, so I'm just going to read this one verse at the very, very, very bottom of the page. Do not let sin reign in your mortal body that you should obey its lusts. And do not present your members as instruments of unrighteousness to sin, but present yourselves alive to God, and your members as instruments of righteousness. Because, verse 14, sin cannot have dominion over you. Now, if you don't have dominion, do you have liberty? Liberty and dominion, are they opposites? Yeah, they're exact opposites. So you're under the law of liberty because you're not under law, but under grace. What does grace mean exactly? It just means when you sin, you have to run to the throne of grace and confess your sins, being poor in spirit and mourning over them. And then you can be forgiven. But under the law of grace, you have to repent of every sin. You have to ask forgiveness for every sin. And you have to identify them and remove them. And you have to be cutting them off. And you have to be working on them. And you can't just allow the good side of things to blind you. I really like, well, I can't say I really like. They're very clear. I don't like them at all, but they're very clear. That verse on the top of the last page where it talks about if you forsake the assembling of yourselves together. Number one, in verse 26, you're sinning willfully. In other words, you're sinning with your will. It was your choice to forsake that assembly. And if you do that, there's no more sacrifice for sin. Jesus coming back again? Nope, it's done. So what's left? Well, a certain fearful expectation of judgment and a fiery indignation which will devour the adversaries. And then, of course, he makes the same comparison James does. If you violated Moses' law, you die without compassion on the mouth of two or three witnesses. What about verse 29? We're under the law of liberty, so it's better, right? No, how much worse punishment do you suppose? Will he be thought worthy who has trampled the Son of God underfoot, counted the blood of the covenant by which he was sanctified a common thing, and insulted the Spirit of grace? Now you say to yourself, well, I didn't mean to do all those things. I didn't think I was doing all those things. What does this verse say? Well, you were. You were. Now, if that's true of forsaking the assembly, what about all these other laws? Is that one different? Is that one more sanctified than all the rest of them? Nope. So we're going to be judged by a law of liberty where we could have done better and we should have done better and we should have known better and we should have taken care of those things. And if we neglect that great salvation that God has given to us and we don't buy up the opportunities, then it's just going to be a terrible, terrible, terrible surprise to some people because they're not buying up the opportunities that they ought to have. All right, final conclusion in verse 13. And he starts with the word gar. Remember, we use that word so many times now in the book of Romans, and it means by the use of this particle, either the reason and cause of a foregoing statement is added or some previous declaration is explained. All right. Well, where did we have a judgment that turned into partiality when it should have been merciful? He was merciful. Was he merciful to the rich man? Take my seat. I'm putting myself in your shoes. I got sympathy and empathy for you because you're rich. What about the poor guy? Didn't have any mercy. Didn't have any sympathy. No empathy. No sense of care and concern for his needs. And so what is going to happen? Judgment is without mercy to those who show no mercy. So there's the application. Is that the first bell, Jason, or second?
No, it's the second.
Uh-oh. All right. I had a few other things I wanted to say on that. So I think rather than going on for another 5 minutes, we'll just cover a little bit on verse 13 next week before we jump into that new section. So I didn't time it perfectly. All right. Any other thoughts or comments? Okay, so what we have now is we have a tremendous opportunity here to make these applications before we stand before God, and He makes them for us. So these are things we need to be thinking about. That's why James put them in here. All right, thank you.